Hello and welcome to the Muppets Mayhem Backstage Pass, the unofficial companion podcast to the Muppets Mayhem, presented by ToughBigs.com. This is the podcast where we tour through every episode of the Muppets Mayhem to uncover behind-the-scenes stories, Easter eggs, and more with the talented cast and crew who helped put the series together. I'm your host, dedicated Mayhead, Joe Hennis. Today we are talking about the penultimate Track 9, Drift Away, in which the Electric Mayhem get addicted to their electronic devices and go their separate ways. This week we're excited to welcome some very special guests. First up, he's the co-creator and executive producer of the Muppets Mayhem. Please welcome Jeff Yorks back to the podcast. Hey, Jeff.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me back. A pleasure.
Thank you for being back. Always good to hear you. Next up, he's another co-creator and executive producer, as well as the performer responsible for keeping Dr. Teeth's gold tooth nice and shiny. Please welcome Bill Beretta back to the podcast. Hey, Bill.
Oh, hello. Hi, how are you? Nice to see you.
Nice to see you. And to hear you, both of them. Our final guest is the Muppet performer who gives life to the Electric Mayhem's lead guitarist and Space Age Moonchild Janice. Please welcome David Rudman to the podcast. Hey, David.
Hello, Joe. Nice to be here.
So glad you're here to talk about this episode. What a joy. What a treat.
Thank you.
So before we get into it, we haven't been talking about the episode titles on this show. Some of them are songs that we hear in the episode, but some of them, like this one, Drift Away, is not. I just wanted to point out that this has an unintentional Muppet connection, because many people don't know Drift Away, which was recorded by Dobie Gray originally, was written by Mentor Williams, brother of Paul Williams. How about that?
Really?
Did you guys know that?
Incredible.
Oh, you thought that was unintentional?
Was that intentional?
No, it was not intentional.
No, really? I just assumed. Yeah.
I didn't know Paul Williams had a brother who was a songwriter. That's incredible.
Yeah. This is definitely Mentor Williams' most famous song. And as Paul Williams has put, it's the only song he wishes that he had written, which is, I think, is very sweet.
It's a great song.
It is. I love this song. We should hear the Mayhem sing it someday.
Yeah.
Maybe. So, David, this is probably Janice's biggest spotlight in probably her entire career. How did it feel to give so much life to her so many years after her original heyday in The Muppet Show?
It was really fun to spend 4 months playing Janice and really developing her as a fully well-defined character. And I think having this incredible team of writers and creators, it was in really good hands. And I think, everything felt really, really solid. And it was fun to play with Janice and do more than just say for sure all the time and play the game.
Although
the for sures were there.
Yeah,
but it was nice to develop her more than just a valley girl saying for sure, really. You know, it was nice to kind of develop her more, and I think it was fun finding her, personality and finding more about her.
Joe, can I ask David a question?
You can ask whatever you want.
We've never spoken about it. I'm just curious, because you were so close to Richard. How does it feel like? What are there things about him that you think maybe you knew that he put into Janice, or was it just kind of him doing this fun, weird character, and then you're taking that on? And like you said, you've got to add new things. But do you think about Richard and how he performed her, or any, like, what feeds that?
Yeah, I definitely think about Richard a lot when I'm performing, especially when I was singing True Colors.
Oh.
Like, for some reason, like, Richard just kept coming into my mind when I was recording that. And, I know he, would have loved to have a chance to do that song, I'm sure. But I think, he inherited Janice from somebody else. So he was like maybe the second person to play Janice. And he really was the one to set the tone for her and give her that kind of valley girl personality. And I know that sort of came from different things. I think it came from when he was on SNL the first season doing Muppets. It was something that Lorraine Newman had a kind of this Valley Girl character that she was doing. And I think that may have influenced him in bringing that to Janis. I think when I took over Janis, you know, whenever that was, 2008, 2009, I of course didn't want to change the whole Valley Girl vibe and, you know, keep that going, but I always wanted to elevate her. And, you know, I think now I had the chance to do it, but, you know, Richard's always on my mind. Every time I put my hand on the puppet, I think of him, you know, and it's the way he moved her. And he, you know, especially when she played the guitar, when he always had her head back, you know, and you know, and her neck, you know, long neck, and her head's bent, her hair is going. So, you know, I try to definitely bring some of that to Janis, that, you know, some of the technical puppeteering that Richard did.
That's a nice
story. Did I tell you what happened? Bill, I think I told you this story. I was out in Jersey. This was like a couple of months ago. This is sort of nuts. And I was hanging out with a friend, just catching up before I had to go somewhere in the middle of Jersey. And his kid's babysitter came over. And he was, my friend's all proud. I mean, I wish I remember her name. I don't remember her name. But he said, "Hey, I want you to meet my friend Jeff. Do you know who the Muppets are?" And she's like, "Yeah." He said, "Well, Jeff has this new Muppet show." And she's like, "Well, yeah, well, my uncle was a Muppet." I was like, what does that even mean?" She's like, "Well, he was one of the original performers." I said, "What does that mean?" She's like, he was Beaker. He was Janis. He was Sweetums. I'm like, what kind of practical joke are you pulling on? I'm like, your uncle was Richard Hunt? And she's like, yeah. So her mother's brother was Richard Hunt.
Wonder, was it Rachel? Was it Rachel's
Is her mom?
Daughter?
Yes. Well,
Rachel's daughter.
Mom Rachel?
Yeah.
Rachel's daughter.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's how small the world is. And I was just like,
my God. That's
incredible. Well, yeah, our show focuses on Janis and the rest of the band. Oh. And she's like, that's awesome. Yeah, I have like pictures of Frank holding me as a baby and Dave Goals dropping me as a baby. And I just could not believe it. And I left just sort of like shook. I called Bill. Bill wasn't picking up. I just kept calling. I'm like, I have to tell this to someone. Who it was just, it was a really nuts.
That's kind of incredible.
Small world.
Yeah,
I know Rachel well, and I haven't talked to her in a while, but yeah, I know Richard's whole family.
This is the thing about the Muppet world, is I feel like we all cross paths, you know, whether it's the puppeteers and like people in the industry and the fans, and we just, at least in my experience, like we just run into each other in the world as if the universe wants us to, you know, magnetically connect somehow.
I was actually the first person to recognize Richard Hunt.
Really?
When I was, I think I've told this story before, but when I was 17, I was in, you probably heard this, Joe, but when I was 17, I was at, in DC, there was like a puppeteering UNIMA convention, 1980, and the Muppets were performing at the Kennedy Center. And I went to it. And before the show, there was like a reception in front, and Jim was there and Frank was there and Richard was there. And I had just seen the Muppets on 60 Minutes. This is like, did a story in like right around that time. And so Richard was like all over that interview, and he was so funny, and just like, I couldn't like help but look at that guy and go, I'd love to meet that guy someday. So like a few months later, I'm at the Kennedy Center. I'm just walking around. I see Jim and Frank, and I walk past this guy who's wearing this orange University of New Jersey t-shirt. Which there isn't such a place, but it's Richard. He didn't go to college, but he went to the University of New Jersey. And I'm like, that's the guy from the Muppets, Richard Hunt. So I went up to him and I said, "Are you Richard Hunt?" He goes, "Yeah, how do you know me?" I said, "I just recognize you." He goes, "Wait, you recognize me?" I go, "Yeah, you're one of the Muppet guys." He goes, "Come here." And he grabbed me, dragged me over to Jim and Frank. And he said, "This guy recognized me." For the first time. And so incredible. And so then like we talked a little bit, you know, and then they went to do the show, and then I didn't see him again for like another year. Once I started working for the Muppets at the workshop, I ran into him again. He's like, "Hey, you're the so-and-so from Chicago." Yeah. And I go, "Yeah." He goes, "How'd you get in here?"
Huh. Yeah. That's cosmic.
That's great. Yeah.
I love that.
Who was the character? Didn't he used to do, the only time I ever talked to him and met him was at Brian's wedding in Tortola. And he came through the crowd.
His Reverend character?
Right, Reverend Richie. Yeah.
Reverend Richie.
And he came through given the gospel and the crowd, like it was everybody was just waiting for something, like for the wedding to start. And from the back of this crowd, he came, he's calling out.
Oh yeah.
And he was doing his sermon through the crowd and people separated and he came forward. I was like, oh man, this guy is unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah.
So we're talking about how great Richard Hunt was and it's just such a unique, a singular human being. What do you think if he were still around and if he were performing Janis for a project like this, what do you think he would have brought to the character that we're just unable to comprehend? Like, do you think that there's like that missing element that's just very specifically Richard?
It's an interesting question.
I don't know how you would know how you would.
I guess that's true.
I will say this, coming from, being a Muppet fan, Richard was my Janis. And even as we were writing, we're just writing for the character. And there was always that just slight hesitation. Okay, we're going to, David does Janis. And I remember Adam and I turning at some point and just being like, no, he's Janis. Like, you absolutely are Janis. You're your Janis, but now our Janis. Does that make sense? Yeah.
But he was developing her further even over the years. I mean,
absolutely.
From 2000 and then got an opportunity at least on the last series to play a bit more with her.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot, right? Sure. But at least you had some more time with her there. Yeah. But it's kind of been your Janis for a while. It's never ours, right? When we take over somebody's characters, exactly. Never ours anyway. But
it's our, and we have to make it our own.
We grow into it. Yeah.
Yeah, right. And you have to, keep, a little bit of the original character because that's like in the DNA of the character. But then you have to bring something new to it or else it's just not authentic.
Yeah, it doesn't grow and they can't grow. It's like we maintain the integrity of who they are and what the originators created. And then hopefully we can add a little bit in there along the way until.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have to stay relevant. In order to stay relevant, they have to be able to evolve and change.
Mm.
So
this was a great opportunity to do that. It was really fun. Yeah.
And speaking of changes, how did you feel about the revelation that Janis has an identical twin sister?
I love that story. And I think Bill mentioned it to me like way back that they're thinking of doing that. And I love getting her backstory. And I love how that connected to the story, the sisters in the show, like their story. And it really helped them with their situation. So it just came together really nicely, I thought. And
dovetails.
Sarah really did. Sarah was fantastic.
She was talking about your performance with her at the door and how amazing you were with Janis revealing that photo of the sisters to her. And she just loved that scene. That was her favorite, like most, I guess she felt, what did she say? It was like it just felt like real emotion. It wasn't the Muppets comedy thing, but it was just a real scene that she got to play with the Muppet and she loved it. I didn't think it was very good, but she liked it.
I know. What does she know?
Yeah, actress.
No, that was, just being able to work with Sarah and, Lily and Taj and Anders, they're so great. And just being able to play those real scenes with them, where it wasn't just comedy, it was like some nice emotion. Really helped define the characters too, just giving more levels again, like I was saying, just, playing stuff for real.
Mm.
I loved it. Some of the scenes with Lily too, is just, it's just fun to explore that.
Bill, you gotta tell the Lily story.
The sleepover when you guys are laying next to, not the sleepover, but the, what, sorry. What's
oh
that,
yeah.
Joe?
Lily's favorite moment. We're going to quote one of the previous podcasts. She just said one of her greatest moments on the show, and it just felt, again, super real, but I guess in a different way, was when she walks in for the first time to find you in your pillow palace, you know, in on the pillow nest, and you're underground, you're under the floorboards, and you're performing Janice. So Lily's just walking into a room where just Janice is right there. There's no sign of any performers or any, you know, and she's just having this conversation. She just felt it was just such a great scene for her. And Bill pointed out.
Probably your worst experience having to be like the complete opposite of enjoying the moment.
I just stretch because I had to.
Your shoulder
only,
was against the floor.
Yeah, not only stretch up to get Janice's full, but she was on a pillow.
Right.
Or a couple of pillows. So I, like, my head was literally pressed against the bottom of the floor.
Yeah.
And I had to stretch all the way up and kind of deliver somewhat of a performance.
And that's what I said
but
to her.
I think
we
did it.
Yours
was
the complete opposite.
A couple times that way. And then we took the floor out and we just shot her head.
Yeah. Right. The medium shot.
Yeah.
We also talked about the scene where Janice is in the hospital bed and you're basically in this coffin. Performing Janice.
Yes.
I could be wrong. You all tell me if this is accurate, but Janice may have been in the worst positions for a puppeteer in this entire series.
Do you think
that you had it the worst?
Some good ones. Everybody got
there was
taste.
Some good ones. I think there was one when she sneezed and passed out, and then she was laying down and you guys were all around her. That was another one where it was like, I don't even know how I was able to get my arm to do that. But
how far can we push Rudman before he snaps? You know,
before your arm snaps.
There were some fun, like the yoga pose scene, which I think it was in this episode that we're going to start to talk about. We've already like run out of time.
Yeah, can't exactly. Talk about real credit.
No, that was really fun. But that was just posing Janice and. I think I was in blue or had a blue sleeve on, so they just removed me from it. So that was fun to pose her. And it was just sort of me and Alice just coming up with these really funny, like ridiculous poses to go along with what these guys wrote.
Well, let's talk about this episode and we'll get to that yoga scene in just a second. But we start with a cold open. Nora is driving the band around in her car because the van has been stolen by the Beliebers. But they're all on their phones and they're not really paying attention to her. Nora wonders how they can all be on their phones without getting carsick. And so of course they all immediately get carsick.
We had written ourselves into a corner because the van was stolen and all of our episodes start with the van cold open. So we had to figure out how to make that work.
Right.
And they had to buy a car.
Talk about being in some positions in that car. Getting six of us there plus Lily, that was a tight one.
Yeah.
Did that car have a false bottom or are you just crammed into the back?
No bottom. No bottom, but still it was a small little car, you know?
Sure, yeah.
So we still are with our monitors and everything we need. It was still,
and then
everybody's all scrunched up.
Yeah, and the projection screens were all around the car. So we could see, you know, driving down Sunset Boulevard or wherever we were, we can kind of see the backgrounds moving as we were going.
Yeah,
really cool.
You guys were just in a fit of giggles.
Yeah, I was very proud of my burps. I was proud of my burp thing. I don't know what happened, but it was like real. It was an authentic one. I can't remember how it was.
It was some nice regurgitation. It was sounded wet. It was like a gag and like a wet.
Burp. It was like like a gurgle burp or something.
I remember, like, we were cracking up when we were doing that, like the gagging, like starting the line and like, oh well, and like having like interrupt the line.
I'm very grateful that there's a lot of heaving and a little bit of burping, but like you don't take it too far. As someone who I am a sympathetic vomiter, like I don't like thinking about vomit. Yeah. Like it just puts me over the edge. And I think if you took it a little bit further, I would have been like, oh, I don't know. I got to fast forward through this scene next time. Like, I can't deal with it. But the heaving was okay.
Yeah,
the who, you know.
I think, oh yeah, that was Janice. I think my favorite thing was Animal going, every time. And then all, there was a take we didn't use, which was then Animal just wanted to be like everybody else. And so he stuck his hand in his mouth to gag himself. And then he threw it up.
The puss is going to hate this.
So our episode begins. Janice is leaving with, Janice is leading a yoga live stream on Instagram. And we see her doing all these poses, the downward dog, downward facing upside, reclining donkey, three-legged rooster, the flirty mermaid, the drowsy dreidel, the nauseous narwhal, and the magician's assistant, which that last one is her levitating somehow and going, wee. That was very fun. So you were making these up on the spot?
No, the names were written. They were in the script and they were hilarious. But the poses, I remember just working with Alice. We just had the Janice puppet that I went in through the back of her head, and she was all armatured, like her arms, legs were all armatured. So we would just like come up with like funny poses and like ridiculous poses. I think Bill, you were there. I think you were there for.
I was in and out. I was back and forth a little bit.
But it was just like coming up with like these ridiculous poses and being able to bend her in any direction we wanted. And then it ended with the magician's assistant. So we just had Alice was holding her legs, I think, and I was holding her head, and we just did that little wee.
That's the best. There's an interesting amount of levitation happening on this show, but it mostly comes from Zoot. I feel like this is the one where Janice kind of joins in on the magic. Janice has gotten over 1 million Instagram followers in just a week because she's got all these followers that just blindly follow everything she says.
It's all new to her. It's like, wow,
she's a natural.
Not surprised. Lips is meeting with speechwriters in his quest to save the world. The one sitting right next to him is a guy named Ben Zelovansky,
is one of my college buddies.
Oh, he is.
Yep, and Adam, we all went to school together, and he's he's also on a ton of the Goldbergs.
Yeah, I noticed that.
I love his reading for Europe. You're in
the band?
Yeah, it's really good. Great reading.
Yeah.
There's also a whiteboard behind them. And I paused and tried to get as much of the whiteboard as I could to see if there was any jokes in there. And there were, of course. Things, that you would expect to see, save the whales and plant trees, go green. There's one thing that says, find out who let the dogs out. There's higher pay, lower expectations, no white shoes after Labor Day. Feed the homeless, home the foodless. And my favorite was stop cyberbullying and also regular bullying. Jeff, you are nodding. I'm guessing this was all you. Is that correct?
No. But we did spend a good 20 minutes just coming up with a bunch of issues for him to tackle. It's a blast just being sent off to do. Like, that's the distraction for the day.
All right, there's the job.
Oh, life is so hard. Yeah.
I just want to go back to one thing that Janice said in that earlier scene where she said, like, breathe in peace and breathe out love.
Oh, yeah.
It was at the end. And I heard that when I was driving into the studio on the radio, like a week before. Oh. I just heard it. So, like, and I was like, that's a Janice saying if I ever heard one.
Oh, wow.
So I just wrote it down, and I just it was like the perfect time to say it.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Awesome.
I just assumed that was a scripted thing. I didn't even clock for me.
I don't think it was. It wasn't. It was just I just threw that in and
tried some things
somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, that was so much fun about the show is that we could try lots of things and do alt takes, and it was such a surprise to see all the episodes because there was so many, there was lots of versions, so much coverage, it really could have been edited together so many different ways. So it's fun to see how it all turned out.
That's why we need to see outtakes. We need to see like deleted scene compilations. We need to see extended scenes. If anyone from Disney Plus is listening, that's what we want. We want more. Hannah is helping Animal with his TikTok dances. He's got almost 4 million followers on TikTok. And we get to see like a little compilation of all these full body animal dances, which is super fun. And we had David Bizarro on the podcast earlier, and he was talking a little bit about performing animals' feet for these. It turns out Animal has killer rhythm. Who would have known for a drummer that he'd have good rhythm? But Hannah's working him to the bone, and he collapses in exhaustion. That's going to be his runner throughout this episode, is that he is tired. Did either of you guys work on this animal stuff, or were you just kind of watching from the sidelines?
No.
No.
I did not.
That's right.
Were hands in it? No.
Yeah.
No, not hands on, but there.
Right.
But it's always surprising to see how long animals' legs are and how short this torso is. Yeah.
You know, this is something we're talking about. Muppet height is a thing that goes up and down.
Yeah.
But things change, obviously. And Janice is obviously always, especially when we see her merchandise, she's very tall and she's very thin. But one thing that I've always wondered, when we see Zoot specifically, he seems to have these tiny little legs, but not always. Is there like, do you try to keep it consistent when we see these full-bodied Muppets, or is it like, I don't know, whatever legs are attached to them, just move on?
Well, no, I think we have to address his legs, you know, because he is considerably shorter than everybody else, and you see it in the opening, you know, the concert that they do in the opening show. But what's in, you know, you normally don't see them all standing next to each other. Normally, if they are full-body, Zoot's usually sitting on a stool, right, playing something, or right, just to get, we try to find those heights for everyone so it feels balanced more. So it's rare that, I'm trying to think of another time when we saw Zoot standing next to Lips, full body. I don't know if there is one.
Yeah.
Normally it's a you know, half body, the frame cuts you off, or they're inside of something, right, or sitting on something, just like out in the back when they're playing at the pool. Janice is sitting on something. Zoot's kind of in the back sitting. Lip, you know, they're all, we're trying to create this composition or this look that feels like it's balanced. And unfortunately, yes, Zoot has very small legs, and he probably needs a good 5 inches added to his legs. Just as he would still be the shortest.
I need that too.
Oh, okay. We got shoes. We can put puppeteer shoes on Zoot.
Yeah. That's just idea. Give him some platforms.
Yeah. Give him, right. Yeah.
Get
a little lift.
Yeah.
Dr. Teeth is posting videos on his YouTube channel of Penny eating hot foods. We see her in the video eating a Satan's blowout chip. And apparently this hashtag, the one chip challenge, is a real thing. I looked it up. There's a company called Paqui. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. And they sell just like this. They sell individual chips that are so spicy, it comes in a tiny little coffin-shaped box. Apparently, they're so spicy they turn your tongue blue, and I don't know how that science works. That's what they claim on their website.
That's scary.
But we get to see Dr. Teeth eat one, and like steam comes out of his ears, and you know, he goes blind in the video, which is hysterical. Yeah. And Penny feels nothing. Yeah, she's fine.
For me, and I think, I'm trying to remember, but I think I suggested that she eats hot things. I can't remember, Jeff, how it played out, because my wife loves hot peppers. And that's kind of our dynamic. Like, she'll eat super hot stuff, and I can eat hot, but not like her. And so to me, my wife and I are Teeth and Penny to a certain degree when it comes to the hot stuff, the spicy stuff.
I was going to say, Adam seems to know all these random internet, you know, challenges. There were like three others that he suggested, and I was just like, that's just too weird. Like, I you know, I feel like I've been around the internet, but that's too weird, and this one seemed about right.
Having a couple of kids myself who are obsessed with YouTube, I am very aware of the style with which these videos are edited, so I thought that was an important thing to capture. So I sent a couple links to our editors for them to sort of mimic that, just you know, the amount of cuts, the terrible edits, terrible graphics of it all, and then just take that and even go further to the point of distraction. But at a certain point, we were sitting with the VFX guys, and they're like, do you want us to fix the steam coming out of... No, absolutely not. The worse, the better. And yeah, it works, yeah. I think.
It really does, yeah. It's exactly idea. How Dr. Teeth would edit a video.
Totally.
That's all. He doesn't have the skills. Floyd has a hit song on the internet. It's his soup jingle, his soup to dupe song. It's being played in YouTube ads, which seems like a big win for him.
Yeah, that's the best part.
I love the soup song. I wish it was on the soundtrack.
I do too. Jeff wrote it, and it's
the basement tapes.
It starts off as my soup, but he changed it to Ma's soup because it had to become a jingle, right? Proper jingle.
I was kind of hoping it would just be like a generic ad for soup, like how we have like an ad for milk or beef.
Oh,
you know, it's what's for dinner.
Not specific
that kind of thing.
Enough. It's Ma's soup.
Not specific enough, but I like the idea just in general of we're just promoting soup. The Soup Council got together to promote soup. Yeah.
I think we also we had like 12 different tags that Matt recorded.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
I don't remember what we even ended up with. Ma's soup, it's better than dad's.
Yeah, there was like a bunch of them. Yeah,
Ma's I don't remember. More than ever.
Yeah, what was it? I can't remember what it is, actually.
I didn't write it down. It was something that was it was relatively generic.
It's not that bad.
That was it. It's not that bad.
Yeah.
And you know what? He's right. It's not.
But I think that was like an argument on this episode. Like, which one do we use? There were enough that were really good that it had to be a 5-minute discussion.
Too many options.
Yeah.
Moog seems to be the only one who recognizes that the band is starting to divide. Now that the album is finished, he is packing up and leaving because his favorite band that he's been following for all this time is over. So he's a little rudderless. But Nora still has to tell the band that she's booked the Hollywood Bowl. And JJ suggests, well, why don't we just tell the whole world? He'll just call his friend God, which is a segue to meet Charlemagne the God. He is hosting the Electric Mayhem as guests on his podcasts. I assume this is a podcast. It seems like it's going out live. So is it a radio show? Is it a podcast?
I believe it's a radio show.
It's his actual. It's a radio show, right? He normally has that show, right?
Right.
I believe we added it with visual effects. There's a sign that says on air in the background of the booth.
That's
behind,
right. In the studio, in the, yeah, the booth. Yeah.
Great. I was going to say if there's going to be a podcast on Muppets Mayhem, then I would like to volunteer to host that podcast since I'm here hosting.
Well, it has to be
one.
Live because Penny has to hear it.
Right. Of course. Also, there's no editing. There's no like, hang on. I know we said X, Y, and Z, but like, let's not tell the world. Let's convince Charlemagne to not release that information. But like, it's too late. It's out there. Everyone knows the mayhem is splitting up.
Yeah.
And I think really stupidly, if you listen carefully, you could hear Dr. Teeth's phone get an alert from Penny.
Yeah, I noticed that on this watch along and in preparation for this podcast, and I thought I looked at my phone because I was like, oh shoot, I didn't mute my thing. And I realized about 30 seconds later, oh, he just got the message from Penny. Yeah.
I love Dr. Teeth in there giving the website. So funny.
That was hysterical.
Taking your time. And then I think you did it a second time. Yep. Didn't you do it twice?
Yeah,
but you
Floyd
edited
started
the second one out.
Yeah, Floyd's like, what's that again?
What's that again?
WW, and then what's his name cuts him off.
Put a slow push on it.
I love how you just took your time. It was so
I had to
funny.
Explain it.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And it would have been enough to just say the letters. You could have said it's HTTP, but no, you're like, okay, there's the two dots, one on top of the other. It's the two lazy lines that are leaning to the side.
Not just the W.
It's not two U's. There's a W.
Two U's.
Yeah.
And then
you're
there's
very
something
clear.
And then you hear them. I think he's still going when it's on. There's a shot of Nora and Hannah in the booth, and he's still going. Let me just explain. Now, if I wasn't clear. It's just kind of a little fill in there. That's stuck good. In.
Yeah. And I think I had the next line after that. Janice had a line. So I just was like, I just said it really fast and with a lot of energy.
just to contrast it.
Just because it was just too, I couldn't.
Janice gives a shout out to her followers, which is the first time we hear what they're called. They're the Fershirlians, which is pretty good. That's a thing that she says. It seems like something that people would pick up on, especially as like in previous episode, a previous episode of Muppets Mayhem, you know, we talk about like the Beliebers and, you know, like the Beehive and, you know, we have the Mayheads for the Muppets. But Janice needed something that felt like something that the fans would have come up with on their own, and that nailed it. Fershirlians is exactly right.
It's incredible. I don't know where that
created by a fan. He's sitting right in front of you.
I'm not sure. I want to say,
wasn't that you
actually?
Oh, Adam came up with Fershirlians.
I think so. I'll take credit for it. Absolutely.
Well, why did I think it was you? I guess it feels like you to me, but maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was somebody else. No, because it's funny.
So good. Yeah.
Charlemagne the God asks if all these solo projects means the band's taking a break, and they all kind of agree. Like, it's, we should explore these other avenues. So yeah, let's break up. Janice says, as her goopy pal Gwyneth would say, we're consciously unbanding.
Yeah.
Which also, I like the fact that Janice would be friends with Gwyneth Paltrow specifically over bonding over the goopy stuff.
Goopy
pal.
Yep.
Yeah.
That made sense. Yeah.
I also really appreciate that the breakup is like, they're all so supportive of each other in this breakup, because it would have been so easy for you guys as the writers to create a rift or have them do like some infighting or whatever. And we wouldn't have blinked at it. Like, I would say easy, but like, we wouldn't have been like, oh, that was a simple, you know, fix. But I just really appreciate that, like, they are still kind of a family, and they still love each other, but they're just going to go off their separate ways.
We had something more intense. I think I pushed back maybe too, Jeff. I don't know.
But also, we did it in previous episodes, you know, like Floyd and Teeth just got into a fight. Animal left the band already, and it was, you know, out of anger. So it just felt like, in a way, you were treading the same ground.
But I think we did have them get upset in a draft. Mm-hmm. But then we realized where we were headed too. And it was like, you know what? We don't need them to be upset. It's actually better if they're embracing each other's separations.
Yeah. It's just a weird, weird breakup. You know,
yeah.
The intent was that that's the worst thing that could happen to a band, is that they break up. But to do it like this is so weird. And Nora's like, I thought I understood you guys. And just when I thought I did, I don't at all. What is happening? You know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And we dumped the breakup on her, which helps us with the story.
Yes. Yep. But also like in a positive way, they're all like, oh, thanks, Nora. Like, you're the one who introduced us to all this new stuff. You know, it's still very positive. And I have to point out, in Muppets Take Manhattan, when all the Muppets decide to go their separate ways, the Mayhem still decides to stay as a collective unit. Like, this is just like, they just can't. They can't break up. They're too close in a way that like very few other Muppet characters are. We're going to check in with Janice. She is packing, and she explains to Nora, true family never really says goodbye. Zoot immediately pops in and says, hey, Janice, bye.
I love that. Bye. And you're like, bye.
Bye.
Can you explain what Janice is wearing in this scene?
I didn't clock it. What is Janice wearing in this scene?
I don't even know. It's something Victoria. It seems almost out of character for her.
Can you describe it for those of us who don't remember?
Renaissance fair, like, you know, a threaded lattice work, and
it's like a crocheted top or something, right?
Is it
like a pale crocheted something?
It's not like Anthropology, you know, like boho chic. It's
right. I don't know.
I could see Janice wandering into a Renaissance fair and fully dressed like someone who would belong, but also not clocking that she's at a Renaissance fair, like not clocking that anything is weird or wrong.
Yeah.
Janice gives Nora her family album and tells Nora that she will always be an honorary for Fershirlian who shall be spared during the reckoning. I love that line. I love how quickly these Fershirlians are becoming like an obvious cult.
Yeah, there's a dark edge to this that we're not so subtle hinting. Like, what truly, you know, like, and Janice has that throughout the show. Just behind the sweetness is this antagonism, and Yeah, something a little nasty happened.
And there were notes coming from the top saying, how culty is this cult? You know, like what's going to happen here?
I think we had a conversation about that too.
Yeah,
Bill, I remember you called me on. I think you called me on like a weekend, and we're like, "This is
because we were getting notes about the cult."
Because you had David Yard. Yeah.
No, I think it was it just rode the line, and it was
Well, we did have to ADR stuff, whether it was Nora saying, and I think Janice has almost started a cult, but I think, you know, what is the line?
She right, that's right. Yeah.
Earlier,
right? She doesn't call it a cult, but she does insinuate it is getting very culty, whatever that one is.
Yeah.
And then you see it in the next episode, and it's totally. I mean, you see all the people, all the for sure.
I love how Janice grabs her face. That's my favorite part.
And there's a soft sound.
Oh, wait,
just close talking.
What did I say? Oh, that's right, because I ADR'd that. I don't know what was there originally.
Oh,
but it wasn't that originally. It was something else.
Something else.
And we added that in one of the ADR sessions. Like, you have soft skin.
You have soft skin. Right.
I think that was added later.
Yeah.
I don't know what was there originally, but
that's funny.
David, since you're not going to be here with us next week, do you want to do you have any memories of being on the compound that you want to share with the other for Shirleyans?
Oh man,
like was it fun being a cult leader for a few minutes?
Yeah. I mean, I think the way that it was shot, I really wasn't with them that much. I think there's maybe one scene where I was actually there. I think there was the one scene where she's by herself in the tent. That was just Janice like armatured. So I wasn't even in the puppet for that. Mm-hmm. I don't think. But and then I think some of the other stuff that we shot when Animal comes through, that was shot in the studio. I don't think that was even at on location.
Yeah, it was. But I feel like I got a friend to call that day that you were trying to work out the green screen tearing.
Yeah, but it didn't work. Something didn't work, so we wound up shooting it at the studio.
We did two different things,
Yeah, maybe we shot it there and at the studio.
We tried it. Yeah. We had the plate for it and all that, but
yes. Yeah.
Have you ever been in a cult? You're about to answer.
Oh yeah.
That's not a real question.
Called the Muppets.
Yeah. Oh, the Muppets. Sure. Right. Being a Mayhead is like being in a cult.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can confirm. At Waxtown Records, we see Penny using a vibrating belt machine. I had to Google this because I was hoping there'd be a fun name for it, but they are just called vibrating belt machines, like you've seen in the cartoons. I know, right?
It looks so good.
It really does. And you really you get a real sense of like how huge that puppet is. Like she's
And Leslie did a great job keeping her moving
inside of there.
And her voice is doing it at the same time. Because that also has
So was it actually moving?
Yeah.
Was that moving or was she just moving it?
No, the belt was. We had a bar in a bar behind her that the belt went to. So that could still be going, but then Leslie had to move her as well. So it was kind of a combo of both. Yeah.
Is the belt controlled by a person or is it like you flip a switch and it actually vibrates?
No, it's a switch. Yeah, it's a real thing.
Cool.
Yeah, I feel like the puppet lost 6 pounds that day.
it's all that water weight.
Yeah.
Penny is ecstatic about the fact that the band is breaking up because that means she and Teeth can go on a worldwide spicy pepper cruise, which is a thing. And she is leaving Nora in charge of Waxtown Records, which is pretty exciting for Nora. But she seems pretty down about the whole thing because it means that her friends are breaking up. You know, she cares a little bit more about that than her job. JJ is also there.
She got everything she wanted, but it turns out it's not what she wanted at all.
Exactly. Yeah. And what's interesting about this, we have JJ here as well, who has been this almost antagonistic character, but really it's just that he's smarmy and he's got, I don't know, that finance bro style to him that makes us just assume that he's going to be an antagonist. But he's making it clear here, like he wants to work with Nora. He wants to be a power couple. He wants his app to support her dream of being CEO of a record label. So he's not so bad in the end. Like I kind of have mixed feelings now.
But then he basically says, you know, we should be shooting higher. This is nothing right now. These guys aren't worth you giving up a whole business for, you know. Yeah. And that's where she goes, oh well. Yeah. You were so close, JJ. You were so close.
Yeah.
You were so close.
Said they're not relevant. Like,
right,
exactly. Yeah.
Do you, David, do you have any memories of working with Anders Holm on this show? Because he is not a guest on this podcast series. We didn't get a chance to ask him. So we're going to ask you.
He was really funny. He was hilarious. And I loved when he would just go off. Like he'd do like what the written line, but then he also would improvise a bunch of stuff. And
yeah. There's amazing stuff.
He's just amazing, like really funny.
Did he come up with Zed Danson? Sorry, I just have to ask.
Oh, did he?
Zed Danson.
Zed Kruger. Cheers. So bad. Zed Danson. So bad. Cheers.
So
good. So good. I think I remember because he came in later than everyone else, right? He was sort of, he joined us after we had already been there for a while, I think. Yeah. And and I think, you know, you could just see him walking into this environment and like seeing all the holes in the floor. And I think he was trying to like, you know, figure out how am I going to walk into a room with holes? You know, it was all new to him, like it was to everybody else, but he jumped right in and he was great from day one. So funny.
That's There's great. The one That's... thing it was really scary. Documentary episode when Animal throws the bongos at his head, it just misses him. It was like really close. He's perfect timing. He just got out of the way, you know. Really good. Great timing.
He's from Evanston, Illinois,
he
too.
Really?
He's from right near where I live. Yeah.
Oh, really?
From Evanston.
And another improv bit that cracked me up was also in the documentary episode, the Beatles episode. When he's talking about when he's saying to Nora, like how he did all of this for her, and he talks about the things that he did where he shaved his, or what was it, waxed his chest,
and he said
hand gesturing classes.
Yeah. It's amazing.
So good.
So good.
Here's a random Anders bit. So he showed up late, but he also had to leave early because he had another gig. And the ironic thing was, I think I mentioned before, I cut trailers to help people sell their shows. And I've done it for different studios. And one of those studios was Legendary. And one of the shows that I helped them sell a pitch for was for this Godzilla show. And so I'm like, what? Right. So wait, Anders now has to leave a week. What is Anders leaving for? What is this show? And they're like, it's a Godzilla show. And I'm like, wait a sec. So I helped.
Get rid of him. Take our guy away.
The reason he's leaving?
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, you did.
That's so funny.
Wow. The butterfly effect. That's what that is.
Totally.
Right.
Yep. Mothra, I believe it is. I believe it's Mothra.
It's the Mothra effect, right. Well done.
Yeah.
So Animal's TikTok is getting so popular. He's starting to get corporate sponsors. So, of course, Hannah is getting jealous. The TikTok that they previously shared, Hannimal, is dropping the H. It's just Animal now. And she's jealous because she's been working her butt off making content for you know, her whole career, but Animal scratches himself and it goes viral, which is actually what we see. We see him scratching himself and the likes are climbing. They get up over 400,000 in just a few seconds. And I just have to point out, this is exactly what it's like working, making content for the internet. I feel like the more I spend time on a project for Tough Pigs or whatever it is, the less likely it's going to catch on. But if I just post a picture of Fozzie Bear, then that's, you know, going to get retweeted by Mark Hamill and suddenly it goes viral. So I really hope people are listening to this podcast that we're also spending a lot of time on. I guess we'll see.
Maybe you just have to cut it into little, like, smaller sentences.
Maybe.
For all of us. So you're just really quick. I think the problem is
talk less. Is that what you're
time,
saying?
Time, right?
Yeah.
Not you. Yeah. No. Just in general, like, everybody's moving so fast. Yeah. They want that quick bite.
Yeah, we got to be
go.
Quick peppier.
Go. Yeah. Yeah.
Faster and funnier, as they say. Hannah takes away Animal's phone and he's going through withdrawal. We get a couple of good shots of Animal here where he's like on the couch shivering. And there's a good shot in the second where he's like inside of a drum and he's on his phone and the light from the phone is shining on his face. That's a really good visual.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Who directed this episode? I didn't clock it. Was this
Kimmy?
Kimmy?
Right? I think it was Kimmy. Was it Kimmy?
He did eight. Is this maybe Rob? No, Rob did six.
No, this
ten.
Is Matt, I think.
Is this Matt? Whoever composed that shot of Animal did a terrific job, because that is a really great.
And aren't those cuts? I'm looking it up from him Kimmy, to the clock. Oh, it's Kimmy.
Yeah, Kimmy. But, yeah, Kimmy Gatewood directed Kimmy this episode.
There's all those.
Yeah. Oh, that's from another episode.
Yeah, and there's all those great shots of pushing an animal's face, cutting to the clock. I think it was
right. We still
cutting back and forth.
Tick tock.
Yeah.
But it was from a different episode, and it was an extended thing. I think it was actually from 10 when Nora's leaving, and she realizes she's destroyed the band, and like she's like, "Look at Animal." And you just see Animal on the couch, and he's just, a shiver. And and so finally we were just like, I don't know. It's so sad. It's really depressing to see him like that. What if we took that and just made it more of a comedic beat and put it in 9, and then even cutting it in a sort of funny way? Again, the TikTok of TikTok, just kind of fun.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the connection.
Yeah.
TikTok of TikTok.
Yeah.
I get it now. They discovered that Zoot has thrown away his camera and all of his Polaroids because he's gone digital, which is, I think, the saddest thing. As someone who likes to collect things, especially Muppet history, it's like, oh my God, why would you throw away all those great photos, Zoot? So I'm glad Nora saved those. They're going to take a little break from social media. And
Joe.
Yes, Bill.
Yeah. It's not real.
This isn't a documentary.
She can actually save him. No, she can actually save them. That was part of the scene, where she's playing the character.
I don't understand. This is real.
Bill,
this is real. I saw it on my screen. Like that, it happened.
This is in the show. It's in the show.
I don't know what you're saying.
I know. No, sorry.
I don't get it. I don't get it at all.
Okay.
The group is, they're going to take a little break from social media. They're going to put a VHS tape in the TV. It's the Electric Mayhem and Elton John from The Muppet Show singing Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. We noticed that the audio here, although the video is from The Muppet Show, the audio is the album version of Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. Is there a reason that you didn't use the audio from The Muppet Show for this sequence?
No.
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know what
Thank you. Thank you for the information.
Yeah.
That's all right.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
It was such a nice choice, though, that song and that moment from The Muppet Shows.
It could have had to do with really the fact that it becomes a montage, and maybe we needed a longer score or something.
Right, because I don't think they do the full version of it on The Muppet Show.
That could be,
Not entirely sure. But yeah, we hit upon that in the room, and it's the absolute right sentiment. It's a strange thing, because at one point she was going to hear it from upstairs. And we love the idea of that was the song, but it seemed weird that it was going to be Elton John. She would hear Elton John, and that would draw her, and not necessarily something of the band. But when we sort of jiggered what this scene could be, she watches him. And so you still have the song, and the band is playing. I think it's really, really nice.
And I love the cassette tape going in, and, it's just the old VCR, and it was really nice. It's great.
Yeah, that's good nostalgia for us.
It was like really was.
We were in the editing room, and I was like, I just want to try something. I could describe it, but I don't think anyone will go for it. Let's just try it. And so we laid the double image, the video, its second layer of video on top. So it's playing over the rest of the scene at a certain point, and it's just, I think it's really sweet. Mm-hmm. I think it works out really nicely.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. It's also nice, as you said, it's the Elton John version. It's not a, necessessarily something that's, at least audio speaking, something that's Mayhem. And I think this might be the only episode where we don't hear the Mayhem sing a song. So I kind of feel like it was nice that you found a way in that it's still technically the Mayhem, because we can presume that they're playing backup for Elton John.
That's what we're presuming. Yeah.
Yeah. But
I love how
it wouldn't make any sense for them to play something together.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's also part of it, is that they're not making music together. She has to go back to a time when they did.
Exactly.
And I love when those songs extend to like two scenes after they keep, you still hear the same song through that whole Nora scene and
source becomes score.
Yeah. And then it just kind of ends the song ends as that scene ends.
And you could ride that emotion of that song.
You did that a lot in the show. That happened a lot. Mm-hmm. And it was so nice how the song would start and it just kind of continued through the scenes, you know, the next few scenes.
That's what I remember early on. Adam insisted that's what he really felt strongly about, was that we did these ending kind of montages, you know, that would take us emotionally wherever we needed to go. And they're all, it's great. Works great.
Yeah.
Also, as Nora's putting together the photo album, that was another thing that Bill and I labored over for quite a few weeks in post-production, going through all of our collective pictures, photographs we took throughout the show, to just pick the right ones, to make them look like they were Zoot's Polaroids.
The photoshopping you did.
We did a lot of photoshopping. And then, but yeah, we mapped it out. Bill mapped it out. Here's what this shot is, because it was all edited, which is Polaroids. This is a Polaroid 1. This is a Polaroid 2. You know, rode this one. Here's a stack. And then we would, give a list. You know, we'd make the pictures and then send them over to VFX to comp in. This is going to go to 1. This is going to go to 2 for this shot. In this shot, we're tighter. So that's still 1. That's still 2. But now we have the... it was fun.
And speaking of that photo album, we also see some pictures of Nora and Hannah together, like with younger versions of them. Are those actually Lily and Sarah in all those? I mean, Lily, you can't tell, but Sarah, mm-hmm. I mean, as a baby, was that actually her? That's great.
Yes.
Nice little touch.
I mean, it's the photo album, family photo album.
Yes, right. Not the Electric Mayhem album. This is a photo album, two albums.
But again, that was clearly the point we're trying to make, you know?
Yeah.
That's the album she should have been working on, focused on.
Yeah. But as you said, the song continues to play over the next couple of scenes. Hannah and Nora and Animal find Moog. He's on top of his trailer looking out over Los Angeles. As I said, he's questioning his life choices now that his favorite band is split up. I get how this feels when, you know, something that you love, you know, is as a fan goes away. What do you do? How do you define yourself if you are really just, that's your number one thing, you're just a fan? And Nora tells him that the band needs him, but more importantly, she needs him. And that convinces him to help get the band back together. And that's our cliffhanger. Disney Plus is gonna love this.
Yep, Disney Plus is going to love this. Two things. I think this is the one time we see Hannah's car. It originally made an appearance in the first episode, and that's why in the opening titles there's the hashtag license plate, because that is her license plate on her car.
Right.
Just making sure everyone saw that. And then the other thing that we just cracked us up in the editing room is that Moog has to come down from the roof of that trailer. And it is
I was just going to bring that up.
Yeah.
It's an incredible leap down.
To like really soften it, because it is a huge jump. It's like a stunt. It's a full on stunt that had to be done.
Yeah.
And
well, he had to be, he had to be tethered up there when he was sitting on top. And then we had a great stunt guy who looked just like him to do the jump. And he did the land, you know. We
never wanted
too.
It to be a stunt. And so we just, you know, I think we took time out of the jump. So he, you know, turns to go off it. And then like, there's not a lot of time. There's not 4 or 6 feet of jump for him to land. And then we soften the land sound effect. So it does sound, he lands kind of light. It's not,
what did Taj do? Did he just jump in place for the landing, or did he actually jump from
something? I think he just jumped up.
Or he just landed.
Or maybe he was on the back bumper. Something, and he jumped off of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway,
you looked at it,
he
did that little jump and stood up, and it was like, this is no big thing. And it just felt so silly, you know? Just 20 feet.
It was a beautiful location, too.
Is that Griffith
We could
Park?
See
that
our Griffith spot Park, was, right? Well, it was further over. You could see Griffith Park. If you were looking out the way Moog and Lily are looking, to the left is the Griffith Observatory. And then behind us is the Hollywood sign, just over these mountains. It's like there's like a turn that you come to, and it's open on both sides. And we were right there at this, where this, you know, joins. So you have the Hollywood sign over there, Griffith Park over there, LA down there, you know?
Yeah.
And then we had a problem. There was like, we had to finish because there was some problem up, like, I can't remember. Was it a fire or something where they had to make everybody come down? So we actually just barely finished the shoot there.
Wow.
Crazy.
Someone who was complaining that some guy was jumping off of car trailers.
Yeah.
Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of Muppets Mayhem. But David, do you have any other memories that you want to share? Any other stories about performing Janice on the show? Anything like that? Any favorite or least favorite moments?
Well, I mean, playing all the, you know, the band scenes are always the most fun, I think, still. You know, when, you know, anytime we were doing a musical number on the rooftop, that was really fun. The camera move going up to the top of the roof was amazing. And also Alice Dineen pretty much always does Janice's hands on the guitar. So she's always like incredible. Just she learns the guitar parts. I love working with Alice.
Was there any cameo, any guest star that showed up that you were like, oh my God?
Yeah, there was, God, there was so many people. There was, Ziggy Marley was really cool working with him.
You guys had a love
affair. Oh man. Yeah, we did. Yeah. That was fun.
Yeah. You broke his heart.
Yeah. That was a nice little backstory moment.
Morgan
I'm
Freeman.
I mean, there's so many people. I wasn't around for that. I didn't see him.
That was mostly him.
Right. That's right.
Billy Corgan was great. He's another guy who lives in my hometown. So it was fun to kind of see him there.
All right.
I see him around town here all the time. And I finally was able to talk to him there on the set. Because
it's crazy.
I wouldn't dare go near him in town here. I don't know. There's so many. I can't. It's just like a blur of, of celebrities.
Bill Beretta.
Yeah.
Who? Oh, yeah. Who? You worked with me.
Yeah.
Yes.
Heard of him?
Yes, we did.
Burt Reynolds.
Burt Reynolds?
He was on this. Yeah. Burt
did you have to cut him?
Yeah.
Did you trim him up? Yeah. He wasn't pulling his weight. I get it. Great. Well, David Rudman, thank you so much for being here. This was such a treat. Such a joy to get to talk about Janice with you. And thank you for all you did on the show as well.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Thank you.
Having such a great spotlight on Janice in this show, and to give her that third dimension, like with the rest of the mayhem, has been such a treat. I've mentioned on the show before, it has been a fear of mine that like maybe we don't want to know too much about the mayhem, but seeing it all actually happen and seeing the work that you all put into it, all my fears are completely abated, and I want to see more.
Yeah.
So hopefully we'll get that chance.
Yeah. Well, like I said before, it's because the team was amazing. It really was the right people involved, and having Bill in a leadership role was really important, I think, to, you know, keeping the characters true to who they are. And, you know, nobody knows these characters more than we do. So it was nice having one of us. Again?
Yes.
Well, thank you again, David, Bill, and Jeff. Thank you both for being here. Always a treat. Very excited to talk with you next week about the season finale of Muppets Mayhem. And
oh my goodness,
we'll see you all then. Thanks, everybody.
See you then. Thanks.
Bye. Jim.
The Muppets Mayhem Backstage Pass is brought to you by ToughPigs.com. Produced, written, and hosted by Joe Hennis. Logo art by Dave Hultin Jr. The Muppets Mayhem mark and logo, characters, and elements are trademarks of the Muppets Studio. All rights reserved. Transcriptions provided by Katie Lynn Miller. The Muppets Mayhem end credits written by Mick Giacchino is used with permission. Special thanks to the Muppets Studio, Disney Plus, and the entire Muppets Mayhem family. For more from Tough Pigs, find us at Tough Pigs on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Patreon. Thanks for listening, and until next time, rock on!